Hello and welcome to Journey of the Monkey King. I'm Kriva and I'm joined by my friend MJ.
Yo!
We're on to chapter 39 of Journey to the West. And this chapter is going to mention a few things in passing. Cannibalism, sort of rape by deception, and also gelding of animals.
An animal?
Yes. Okay. And the pain headband is also going to get a look in. So all fun things.
Trigger warning, torture accessory.
Yay. Yeah.
Yay.
It's the entire book, but yeah, it's always there.
Just lurking in the background.
In the last chapter, Sun Wukong got tricked into agreeing to resurrect the king of the Black Rooster Kingdom, and he's going to have to do it without even going to the Region of Darkness to try and find his soul.
He can't even storm in and demand to speak to the manager.
No, he's agreed. No. He's agreed not to do that.
He's no more Sun Wukaran.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Not necessarily.
Interesting.
So he plans.
This is what we're here for.
He plans to ask Lao Tzu for help, but
the same Lao Tzu who he stole all that elixir from.
Yeah.
Trashed his gaff.
Yes.
That Lao Tzu.
That Lao Tzu. Yeah.
Why is Sun Wukong so many people I knew in college? Hey, you remember how I vomited all over your curtains and nearly got you evicted? Borrow 50 euro. Yeah. Fuck you, Nick. I feel like this, on so many of these episodes, I just air past grievances.
This is a welcome to MJ's therapy session.
Welcome to MJ's never-ending fourth step. If you get that, I'm sorry. Anyway.
So he was it? Where was I? Oh yeah, he plans to ask Lousy for help, but before he goes, he says that someone should stay here and mourn the king while he's away. And he orders Zhu Baji to do it.
How I'm looking forward to figuring out how you can fuck up mourning.
So Baji rips up some scraps of paper and shoves them up his nose to make him sneeze and to make his eyes and his nose run, and puts on a show of wailing sorrowfully.
That's not bad.
Yeah, he makes enough of a show of it that he actually Tripitaka starts crying as well, and Xiao Wujing comes out and lights some incense for the king as well.
You know, between that and the sexual assault, there may be a place for him in the entertainment industry after all.
Wukong laughs at them and heads off to heaven. He finds Lao Tzu at home in the middle of making elixir with a few divine utes fanning his fires with plantain leaf fans. It doesn't say one
divine
way.
Divine what?
Utes.
What's a ute?
A young person.
Oh, a youth.
Yes.
I forgot you were in Cork for a minute.
Hey, I'm not from Cork. Fuck you.
I didn't say you were from Cork. I said you're in Cork and it seeps into you.
Yeah.
Like mold into a poorly ventilated building.
Oh, like my flat.
Yeah.
I was spraying mold earlier today. The cat is currently not allowed to go into the hallway because it's full of bleach.
Oh, poor Asog.
Yeah. Anyway... It doesn't say, like, one way or another whether these two, assistants are the, you know, the gold and silver horn demons who were also Lao Tzu's assistants. But it, seeing as it doesn't say one way or the other, you could probably assume that they aren't. But yeah, Lao Tzu warns the two assistants as soon as he sees Wukong that, you know, this guy has ransacked the place before. Keep an eye on him.
Fair.
Yeah. Wukong says he doesn't do those sorts of things anymore, and Laozi gives him an earful. He calls him monkey, which I've said before, very despite like certain translations, in like this translation at least, I assume the original, very few people call him just monkey. It's very informal. So I think here it's meant to show a bit of a lack of any kind of respect.
Bit of a dig.
Yeah. So he calls him monkey.
Get him, Laozi.
He complains about the countless elixirs that Wukong stole in the past and the amount of charcoal that Laozi had to waste trying to burn him in his brazier for 49 days. That time that Wukong was sentenced to death and they tried to burn him and it just wasted so much charcoal on it.
He's energy conscious.
He says, you're lucky to have regained your freedom, but even then you were still giving me a hard time when I asked you for my treasures back at the Level Top Mountain. Why are you here?
Can I borrow 50 euros?
Yeah, Wukong says, I didn't give you a hard time. I gave you back all the treasures that I had. Like, why are you so suspicious of me?
It's gentle ripping. It was just flagging you.
Yeah, he's just like, okay, why aren't you on the road then? Why did you sneak into my palace? And Wukong explains the whole business with the Black Rooster King and trying to bring him back to life. And he asks for 1,000 tablets of Laozi's soul restoring elixir of 9 reservations to bring the king back to life.
I mean, you gotta applaud the chutzpah there.
Yeah, 10,000 tablets. I think he's intentionally, you know, asking for 20 to get 10 kind of thing.
Yeah, ask for a pony to get a puppy. It's a pretty good tactic, in fairness. Just a heads up for anyone dealing with the Arts Council.
Laozi gets pissed off at this. He says, you think you're meant to eat these like rice? Do you think they're made of mud? Go away, I don't have any. And Wukong says, all right, how about 100? I don't have any. Just 10 then. I don't have any, get out. You really don't have any? Okay, I'll go somewhere else then. Go. He fucks him out. But as soon as Wukong is out the door, Laozi thinks to himself that if he sends Wukong away empty-handed, he's just going to come back and steal everything instead.
It's true.
He sends one of his assistants out to call him back in, and he gives him one tablet of the elixir. And Wukong does admit that this is good because he would have just come back and stolen it otherwise. He just freely admits that.
Yeah. Yeah.
No one is under any pretenses here. And Laozi says, okay, take it. I'm giving it to you. Just take it and go. And Wukong says, oh, he needs to have a taste of it himself first to make sure it's real. And he pops it into his mouth. And Laozi just runs forward and grabs him by the head and lifts his fist up and shouts, if you swallow that, I will kill you.
Get the fuck out of my house.
Wukong says, oh, don't need to be so petty. Hold on. Who's eaten this? I haven't eaten it. How much could it even be worth? I have it right here. And he shows he actually has, apparently he has it tucked into a pouch underneath his jowl. I'm not sure if that's meant to be inside or outside his mouth. It's kind of a weird...
So he's just anatomy.
Detail.
Tonga, basically. Okay.
Yeah. So Laozi just tells him to go away and just don't bother me again. And Wukong returns to Earth and to the monastery, and he puts the tablet into the king's mouth and flushes it down into his stomach with some water. And they wait around for about half an hour, and the pilgrims start to hear noises from the king's stomach, but he doesn't move. Wukong is worried that the elixir isn't working, but Tripitaka thinks that the king's heart has started beating again, but he's just not breathing yet and he needs mouth to mouth.
Could you just give it a... Who knows how long it takes to come up on soul tablets? Just
Baji volunteers to give Mouth to Mouth, but Tripitaka stops him and tells Wukong to do it instead, because Baji's breath is too unclean from all those years of cannibalism, while Wukong's breath is clean from only ever eating fruits and nuts. Which Wukong has actually claimed to have eaten people before.
Hasn't he eaten like a bunch of guys?
He said he did, but now the narration is now saying he hasn't. So I mean, it's just an inconsistency in writing, really. But you could pretend that he was just lying about eating people for some reason when he said it.
He seems the type, you know. He's just trying to be intimidating.
Yeah, just, I don't know.
Possibly an entirely vegetarian psychopath.
But one breath from Wukong into the king's lungs immediately revives him, and he gets down on his knees and thanks Tripitaka for bringing him back to life. And Tripitaka says he should be thanking Wukong, his disciple, but Wukong insists that, you know, he's the boss here, so he should accept it. As in, Tripitaka's the boss. So Tripitaka should accept it.
That's growth. I don't know.
They get the king washed and the monastery provides some new clothes for him to put on, as his are still soaking wet because, you know, they pulled him out of a well, and they all get breakfast. And as they're saddling the horse to move on, Wukong has a plan. He has Baji divide up the luggage he was carrying into two bundles and he gives one to the king. Baji, being Baji, puts all the heavy stuff into the king's bag and just completely overloads him. But the king is going to be joining the pilgrimage as they head into the city. And when they go into the palace to get their passport stamped, they're going to reveal him as the real king. The king says he's happy to take the luggage and he offers to just join the pilgrimage and carry all the stuff all the way to the Western Heaven and to Buddha.
He really does not want to go home.
Well, he's just really grateful. He says, "You're like parents who've given me a new birth."
I'm going with he really does not want to go home.
Okay.
Between him spending all this time with
the Taoist
murderer, the Taoist, and this, I get the feeling the man isn't happy. There's something going on there.
I don't think we're not really going to get much in the way of any personal reaction from him. So I don't think we're going to really confirm that one way or another. So,
well, that's what fanfic is for.
So when they get to the palace and approach the fake king, Tripitaka wants to go through the normal ceremonies, but Wukong doesn't want to have to bow to the fake king. So he takes the lead and announces their pilgrimage. And when the Taoist receives them, Wukong refuses to bow. And the fake king asks them why. And their kingdom pays tribute to China. They have good relations. You know, why are you insulting me like this? And Wukong says, our celestial court in the land of the East was established in antiquity, and ours has been called the superior state for a long time. Yours is only a state of the hinterlands in an inferior region.
Ooh.
Your kingdom ain't shit.
Shots fired. Please tell me the episode title.
Yeah, sure.
Alright.
I did censor the title of the last episode because I put the title of the last one as "If my dad was alive, he would definitely be fucking." But I thought that, you know, Apple and Spotify might take issue with that, so I put in asterisks. I hope that's enough for them to not mind.
Oh, fucking prudes. Americans, I swear to God.
I do mark every, like, episode of this as explicit.
Your kingdom ain't shit.
Your kingdom ain't shit. Yeah, the Taoist orders them seized, but Wukong freezes the guards in place with a spell. And the monster tries to dive at Wukong himself, but the prince rushes in and grabs his fake dad by his clothes and begs him to stop. He says he knows who these monks are. Not only are they on a pilgrimage from China, but the Tong monk is the emperor's own blood bond brother. He warns that Li Shimin, which is Emperor Taizong's given name, would not be happy if he was killed, and the Tong army would easily crush them. It's interesting that the prince uses Taizong's given name. I think this is only the second time it's been used, and the first was by his brothers in the afterlife. So maybe being royalty himself, the prince can get away with a bit of informality when talking about the emperor. I just thought that was interesting.
Maybe they're, I was going to say golfing buddies, but whatever the equivalent was in the time and place.
But yeah, the Monster King comes down and he asks them to explain their pilgrimage and why they're not paying suitable homage. And Wukong gives a history of the pilgrimage and how each member came to join in. He claims that the real king that they have with them in the party is a new recruit that they picked up at the monastery that they just passed, which is, I guess, technically true. And he says, I could tell you all about him, but by the way, he's dumb and deaf, so please don't ask him to verify anything that I say.
Seems legit.
Yeah. He starts reciting a poem telling the story of this new monk, but quickly turns into actually just telling the full story about the real king and how the Taoist murdered him. And he ends the poem declaring the king on the throne is an imposter. The monster, realizing the jig is up, grabs a scimitar from one of the palace guards and flies away. And Xiao Wujing and Zhu Baiji just give out to Wukong for just telling the monster that they knew about him and giving him enough warning to just run away. Which, yeah, why the fuck did you do that?
Showboating. There's some James Bond villain bullshit.
Yeah. So Wukong chases after him and they fight in midair for a while before the demon flees back into the palace, throws himself into the crowd and shapeshifts into the form of Tripitaka, and we get the classic which one do I shoot situation. Goes well back.
Yeah. It's an ancient trope, an ancient and noble trope.
Each Tripitaka claims to be the real one and none of them can tell them apart. Even Wukong can't, and he can normally always spot the monsters. So they decide to get them to do something that only the real Tripitaka would know how to do, which is recite the tight fillet spell.
Oh no! Oh, well, that's some noble self-sacrifice, I guess.
So the real Tripitaka is able to recite it, but the monster just kind of starts mumbling random words and then runs away. And the pilgrims try to chase him down again, but when Wukong rushes in to attack, he hears a voice telling him to stop. And it's the Bodhisattva Manjushri. I looked up how to pronounce this and I'm after forgetting it. I'm sorry, I'm very tired.
That's, yeah. You're post Pfizer.
Yes, I'm now immune to all diseases, thankfully, at least.
Yeah, you are invincible.
Yeah. I'm like Monty Burns.
Invincible.
But yeah, so the Bodhisattva says he's going to deal with it. He pulls out his imp reflecting mirror, which reveals the true form of the monster, which is his own green-haired lion. The book says green-haired lion. I looked up Manjushri otherwise, and like most, the couple internet sources I found describe it as blue-haired, and most of the like illustrations also seem to paint it blue, but the translation here says green. Those are quite possibly the same word in the Chinese this is written in. There's a whole interesting thing about the evolution of colors in languages, and green and blue tend to be one word in a lot of languages. The kind of initial distinction that's made in colors is kind of warm, like red and oranges and browns, versus cool blues and greens, and then they kind of divide from there. It's a very interesting thing to look up.
Huh. Today I learned.
I'll just include that, a link to that in the show notes. To be, so I'm just making a note to do that. Anyway, Wukong asks him why his line was running amok here, but Manjushri explains it's not running amok. This was all under orders from Buddha. So years ago, Buddha thought that the king of the Black Rooster Kingdom was very virtuous, and he sent the Bodhisattva to guide him back to the Western Heaven to become an Arhat. An Arhat is, looking up the context of it, different sources I found described it in different ways. One described it as someone who has attained nirvana through the teachings of a Buddha. So if you obtain like nirvana by yourself, you're a Buddha, but if you attain nirvana from the teachings of a Buddha, you're not a Buddha, you're just an Arhat. And someone, another source more described it as differently, described it more as kind of being on the pathway to Buddhahood, having like achieved enough enlightenment to no longer experience reincarnation, but you're not quite a Buddha yet. So it, but okay. It's in any case, it's a very holy person at the very least.
I mean, yeah, it's more than most people get.
So the Bodhisattva to do this mission transformed into an ordinary monk and went to beg for food from the king. But while they were talking, some words that Manjushri said angered the king, and he had him tied up with a rope and thrown in the moat. And he was stuck there for 3 days and nights until the six gods of darkness rescued him. And as revenge, Buddha sent the line to throw the king into the well for 3 years. And it does use the word vengeance, which is, you know, not a word you'd normally associate with Buddha.
It's not one you'd use lightly either.
But
only 3 years in the well, something's up. Oh, okay. See, he's just been really, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he was dead for 3 years.
Divine plan, divine plan.
Yeah. So, Wukong says that, you know, the personal revenge is all well and good, but how many innocent people have suffered from the lion usurping this throne over the past 3 years? And the Bodhisattva said, oh no, he hasn't. He's been ruling the kingdom very well. There's been nothing but peace and prosperity. Everyone's happy. He's actually a great king. And Wukong is like, okay, but what about all the women of the palace that he slept with, not realizing he was a monster?
It's a very good point.
And the Bodhisattva says, no, he definitely didn't do that. He's gelded. And Baji gives the monster a pat on the back in sympathy for this. And everything neatly wrapped up. The lion changes back into his original form. Manjushri saddles him and rides off back to the Western Heaven. And that's the end of chapter 39. Everything's sorted out now. It's all fine.
Yep. No problems.
No problems at all. Nope. All of that was perfectly normal.
Yeah. Still can't believe your man, the prince, was just like, my dad would definitely be fucking if he was still here. I mean, that's going to be the main takeaway for me for this.
For this entire, like, three chapter long plot line.
From this storyline, yeah, that's what I'm going to remember.
I mean, I guess he knows his dad.
Yeah. Extremely well. Uncomfortably well. On that note.
Yeah, I have nothing to add.
No.
Read up about the evolution of color terminology and languages. It's very interesting.
Yep. That's your afternoon tour.
Cool. Bye.